IKEA Cake 4.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to 52nd Street, Winnipeg's home of classic jazz. My name is Jay. For the next hour, I'll be your host right here on 101.5 UMFM. And can I do a bit of a different show for you tonight? You know, here's how it all started. I'll just kind of take you back. I was actually going to do a bebop show and play some Charlie Parker, some Dizzy Gillespie, some Bud Powell, you know, the usual things. And instead, I realized it's been a while since we've done a swing show, and people, you know, love swing. But I wanted to do a show that was, you know, when we talk about swing, we often talk about sort of the big band stuff, and we play stuff that goes into the 1940s, and it kind of smooths out a little bit, right? If we get more vocalists involved, the music kind of smooths out a bit. And so I wanted to give you something that was just a little bit more frenetic. And so everything you hear tonight is going to have sort of a 4-4 beat, and you're going to hear some arrangements from almost all of the songs. In fact, I think every song tonight is between 1936 and 1939. By the time the war starts, by the time singers become more prominent, the arrangements really start to smooth over. And so in this idea of – it's this idea of hot swing, and it kind of comes from the 1920s concept. And the reason I want to do it is because oftentimes when we talk about jazz in the 1930s, we're so dominated with the conversation around big bands, which is rightly so, and what we're going to play a lot of tonight, that we overlook that the frenzy that was bebop and the frenetic movement of bebop didn't come out of nowhere, right? There's a long history in the 1920s and that kind of style, all the way from the original Dixieland jazz band, in terms of the recorded jazz history. And I didn't want you to get the impression that in the 1930s, jazz just became the swing era and it was all about dancing. There's lots of great dance songs, and there's lots of songs. We're going to hear some tonight that kind of smooth out. We're going to hear some vocals tonight that kind of smooth things out a bit. And there's great ballads, and there's different kind of pop music. But there's also a kind of a frenzied undertone to jazz as well. And we start off tonight with Charlie Barnett's hit song, Cherokee, which is his 1938 song, but just a huge hit for him. Of course, Cherokee is a staple in the jazz world, became a standard, and became very, very important in the bop movement, not only because it was covered later on by other musicians going forward, but also because the chords to Cherokee were later substituted to become chords for songs like Scrapple from the Apple and Hot House and others. So the basis is here, and I wanted to give you some examples. We're not going to do everything frenetic, but you're going to get some examples tonight of songs that give you a sense of where bebop comes from. That we often talk about bebop as this highly technical music, which it is. And we also talk about bebop as being very frenetic, which it is. But it doesn't come out of nowhere. It actually comes with a very strong jazz history. So we're going to play some pieces tonight that I think are going to fit in with that. Coming up next, we're going to hear from one of the great bands of the swing era. This is a 1939 recording. Jimmy Lunsford, often overlooked, his records were what in those days were called race records, which is to say they, of course, were this black band, African-American band, and so it wasn't widely publicized outside of that community. So you get a lot of these sort of Harlem bands that have success nationally with sort of these race records, the which later became the R&B charts, and eventually get merged well after rock and roll. But these are bands that sometimes get lost, and Jimmy Lunsford's is considered by many to be the premier band of the big band era. So we're going to hear from him right now from a 1939 recording called Uptown Blues, right here on 52nd Street. Thank you. you go. So we are in 1936 to 1939 examining the swing era, and we started off a little bit slow. We started off with Uptown Blues by Jimmy Lunsford. After that, we heard from Tommy Dorsey and his band with Stop, Look at Listen, and then Artie Shaw and Nightmare. So if you turned on the radio, believe it or not, 1936, 90 years ago. Those are some of the songs that you would have heard. We're going to keep things up a little bit more now and get into some of the more frenetic things that we talked about. We're just giving you a sense of what that music sounded like and the basis for some of these pieces. And so you can hear the rhythms are very straightforward, which is something that was going to change in a few years. But there's a lot of interesting sort of harmonies happening and some very interesting things happening from in terms of the tonal patterns and chords. So even within the confines of the big band sound, there is some things happening that are really starting to push boundaries a little bit, and that's really where bebop would go into an individualized tangent. But let's hear a little bit about what's happening. 1937, a jam session is recorded that features Bunny Berrigan on trumpet, my grandfather's favorite trumpeter, along with Fats Waller on piano. And they did a song of his called Honeysuckle Rose. We're going to hear that first from 1937 and then go to a recording from Bunny Berrigan and his band called Shanghai Shuffle. We're going to start getting into this kind of more frenetic pace that we were talking about. Let's start off, though, with the great Fats Waller and Honeysuckle Rose. Thank you. there you go, as we descended to chaos. You're listening to the 1930s, late 1930s. It's the 1938 right now. We just heard The Eel from Bud Freeman. And before that, Bunny Berrigan and his orchestra with Shanghai Shuffle, and started off the set with Fats Waller featuring Bunny Berrigan on the trumpet from 1937 jam session, the Victor All-Stars. And Fats Waller's own composition of Honeysuckle Rose. I feel like as we go back to the 1930s, I should probably do that thing where, you know, you talk like old radio hosts, or, you know, they have that weird sort of accentuation on different syllables. But I'm not going to, because we're just exploring this. So what we're talking about really is what 1930s swing looked like and the evolution of the 1930s swing. It's a funny thing, right? Because the swing era, as we know, it starts in the sort of the late 1930s, 1935 to be more precise. Now, jazz in the 1920s had developed very significantly, mostly in the ballrooms of Harlem. And Chicago and Harlem were the main areas. People talk about New Orleans. That was sort of a little bit earlier. By the 1920s, Louis Armstrong, Kid Ory, a bunch of people had moved up to Chicago. And so there was a sound that was developing in Chicago, and there was a very sophisticated sound that was developing in New York City, led by Duke Ellington. We're going to hear from him in a few minutes. But there was other sounds that started to develop around the country. The swing era, though, as we understand it, as the big band era that has become sort of the popular understanding of jazz, actually starts in 1935. And the band that starts it, we're going to hear from later on tonight as well, is Benny Goodman's band. And it's sort of an interesting story because New York is developing its very own sort of swing scene. And it's different from other parts of the country, but connected, right? Chicago and New York are obviously very connected in terms of how they're growing, even though the influences may be different. The Chicago style of jazz, which you just heard in somebody like a Bud Freeman, is still very much based on that kind of 1920s jazz. There's a bit of a slap tongue kind of thing on the tenor saxophone still happening. There's much more of a syncopated rhythm that's happening. And what it's doing in Chicago is it's kind of taking that Dick Spiderbeck 1920s influence and merging it with a traditional New Orleans sound and creating what we think of in many ways as jazz today. New York was a much more sophisticated place, and the reason it's the big band era is because they had these great ballrooms, mostly in Harlem, but other parts of the city as well, where you'd have these bands playing, and there was dance music. And so the great story of the swing era, for those of you who haven't heard it, and those who have, you can just forgive my very truncated version, which some of you will obviously disagree with, but the very quick truncated version of it is this. 1935, Benny Goodman and his band get a radio show on NBC, which is the same NBC that we know and love today, but it was a radio station in those days, a national radio station, a National Broadcasting Corporation is actually technically and still remains what it is. They have a show, but the show's on around midnight in the East Coast. And so they play every week and sort of a lackluster response. And they go on tour. And they go on tour nationally, and they go from east to west. And the tour is not doing well. In fact, the tour is doing poorly. And so, you know, they get people coming out in New York because it's New York. They get people in Chicago who listen to the show. They get to Denver and they kind of say, you know what, I think we're done. This isn't working. This music's not working. We can't make a go of this. And they say, okay, you know what, let's finish off the tour. And the tour ends in California. And lo and behold, when they get to California, 10,000 people are waiting at the ballroom doors to get in to listen to this band. Why? Because it's 9 o'clock at night in California when that show is going on the air. So at midnight, no one in New York is listening, but at 9 o'clock at night, it's primetime radio listening. And so Benny Goodman's band becomes the first sort of swing era band. Lots and lots of bands around that. We're going to talk about some of the other ones, including the rise of Duke Ellington and what he means to jazz, including the regional bands from Kansas City, groups like Count Basie, who we'll hear from in a few minutes. But the whole point of the story is that we think of the swing era as a sort of dance music, and it is, but there's also this kind of frenzy that's underlying it. You heard it in The Eel. You heard it a little bit with Bunny Berrigan's band. You heard it a little bit with that jam session, and you're absolutely going to hear it with this. From 1939, here's a big hit from Harry James and his band. It is 2 o'clock Jump. Thank you.
it may be only midnight here in the East, but that, well, you know, it's a 1 o'clock jump. And it means Count Basie, that famous Count Basie and his celebrated orchestra, playing for you from the Southland, located downtown in the city of Boston, Massachusetts. Vocals tonight by Helen Hume and Jimmy Rushing. Join us in a 1 o'clock jump. I won't do any rhapsodizing about Count Basie. I'll let him do it himself. All right, Count, Ebony Rhapsody.
Oh, there you have a little bit of 1930s radio host for you. You know, I love the way they talk, and there's a weird kind of accent they do. My son does a great job on it. One of my favorites is I was listening to a Count Basie recording once live. That, of course, is Count Basie with 1 o'clock jump right after Harry James's 2 o'clock jump. And you know, that one's from Boston. And they come on with that great way of talking, the way they have. And the guy comes on, the announcer, and he goes, "Solid like a block of Vermont granite." Which I gather at the time was sort of a household reference. Like, hey, you know what? I wish you were more solid like that Vermont granite. Anyway, so we are continuing our 1930s swing era. And I'm not going down that rabbit hole of talking like a 1930s announcer, despite popular requests. But you just heard 2 o'clock jump from Harry James from 1939, and then 1 o'clock jump, which is a 1937 hit of Count Basie. The interesting thing about 1 o'clock jump, talking about radio and live radio, I think I've told this story on the show before. It didn't have a title. Actually, it did, and I'll tell you that in a second. So they were actually playing a show just like that, a national show. I don't know if it was NBC or another one. And they played the song, and the song didn't have a name. And so it ended up getting named on the air, almost exactly like you heard there. Now, the song was called by the musicians Blue Balls. As you can imagine, in 1937, Blue Balls was not a top 10 name for a song, or maybe it was, but so it didn't have a title, and so they're doing a live show, and they play that, and just as he says, well, it's not 1 o'clock, it's 12 o'clock, it was 1 o'clock, and so the announcer said, it's 1 o'clock. Jump, meaning just go out and dance. And that's how the song got the title. So 1937, that's how 1 o'clock jump became a hit for Count Basie. And of course, 2 o'clock jump, 1939, becomes a hit for Harry James. All right. A little bit of radio history kind of moved in tonight as well. There you go. We're going to continue on with some of these great songs. You know, we talk about what was happening in the U.S., but what was also happening in Europe becomes important as well. A couple of things going on in Europe contemporaneously. This is pre-World War II, so in the era between the wars. You have a number of jazz musicians from the U.S., African-American jazz musicians, that go to Europe because, A, there's an appreciative audience, and, B, no segregation, so they're actually treated like human beings. And so a number of the greats of jazz actually disappear in the 1930s. Coleman Hawkins, the founding father of the tenor saxophone, spends 5 years in Europe. Sidney Bechet, the great New Orleans soprano saxophonist, spends time there. And the list goes on. Lots and lots of musicians end up staying, and some of them end up staying, and certainly go back after the war. In fact, a lot of the bebop musicians go back almost immediately after the war, where they find a very appreciative audience for what was in the U.S., a music that was widely disdained by jazz fans, but in Europe was deeply appreciated. At the same time, there's a great scene developing in Paris, the Hot Club of France. Many of you will know it. Django Reinhardt on guitar and Stéphane Grappelli on the violin. And they take the improvisational spirit of jazz and the songs and arrangements, to some degree, of modern jazz at that time, the modern swing era, and they integrate them with traditional European music. Django Reinhardt was a gypsy, and he takes a lot of that traditional kind of style and integrates it together. Interesting thing about Django Reinhardt, he had burnt his hand very, very badly in a fire, in a trailer, actually, and was able to escape, but his hand was permanently set in one way, and so he was able to play guitar with his hand set in one in the same spot over and over again, which is absolutely incredible when you think about it. So here we go back to 1937 again. This is Stepan Grappelli on violin, sometimes on piano, and Django Reinhardt on guitar, and their version of Sweet Georgia Brown.
Thank you.
There you have it. Two in a row. We started off, actually. I have no idea what we started off with. Yeah, we started with something. we started with Django Reinhardt and Sweet Georgia Brown from 1937, featuring Stefan Grappelli on the violin. And those two just played so beautifully together. After that, back to 1937, and just kind of a fun song. You know, the beginning of R&B, like, you want to talk about what's sort of developing. Hot Lips Page, who was a great trumpeter, died very young, actually, of a heart attack, was recording stuff in the late 1930s and well into the late 1940s. I think it's overlooked when you talk about the history of rock and roll, the development of rock and roll, but you can kind of hear it there. Baby Look at You was the song. That one featuring Pete Johnson on piano. It's technically from Pete Johnson and his Boogie Woogie Boys. Joe Turner, the young and great Joe Turner on vocal. It's interesting. It's 1937, but you're really hearing that R&B splinter, right, that would start off in the 1940s more so and then develop through the 1940s through the music of Louis Jordan and eventually become rock and roll. And, of course, we've talked about it many times as to the contention around the very first rock and roll song, which we probably should do a show around one day, just talk about sort of some of these old songs and do the show. And then we jump back to Chu Berry and his group. That one also featured Hot Lips Page on the trumpet from 1937 as well, March of 1937. So getting close to 90 years old. That one called Limehouse Blues. You know, when I played tenor sax, when I was a young man, younger than I am now, people always said I sounded like Chu Berry, had the same kind of tone as Chu Berry. Just a beautiful compliment, because one of the great players of the swing era. He, of course, we don't talk a lot about him, but was a star in the swing era, considered one of the big four of the tenor saxophones during that time, which is quite an accomplishment. Died in 1940. I believe it was 40 or 41, a highway accident in Ohio while touring with Cab Calloway. Coming up next, we're going to, I don't have a lot of time, but I don't care. I'm going to fit in two songs that, why not? We talked a little bit before about Duke Ellington and his group and how they developed in Harlem. Duke Ellington is incredibly, incredibly sophisticated as a songwriter, as a composer, as a arranger, as a band leader, as a musician, as someone who changed the language of music. And in the Cotton Club, he really perfected the band. They went from a dance band to very much a conceptual band in a lot of different ways. And he wrote beautiful, beautiful songs. And encouraged others to write, including this next song from 1936. Juan Teasel wrote it, but Duke Ellington made it the classic that it is. Here is Caravan. Thank you. There you go, Billie Holiday, early Billie Holiday from 1937 with My Last Affair. The interesting thing with Billie Holiday is, let me be clear, one of the great singers, period, jazz, blues, early rock, whatever you want to call her, it makes no difference. I don't know that you can classify her. If you listen to her later on when she does some of the great classics of her career, things like Strange Fruit or some of the others, Don't Explain, that are so haunting and so profoundly moving, her voice changes quite significantly. It's much raspier. The feeling never does. And one of the things with Billie Holiday is, you know, you hear people trying to emulate her. It's, I just think, a massive mistake because you can't replicate that feeling. But what changes later on is she loses that upper voice. And so I played that song, My Last Affair, because I want you to hear what a young Billie Holiday sounded like, and that sort of high-pitched voice that she could have in that high range that she lost later on. And it doesn't take away from her as a singer. In fact, I think she's probably a more compelling singer later in her career. But her voice changed pretty significantly. And listening to the old stuff, you hear that sort of range that she had and how remarkable she really was in just every way as a singer. And of course, before that, you know, I talked about sort of the conceptual nature of Duke Ellington's band. And yet, you know what? He had hits and he was on the charts. And I think when you think about what he was doing, that's amazing because he is so intellectual and so far ahead of what everybody else was doing. All right. We are absolutely out of time, and I'm absolutely going to go out of time over time because the person that comes in after me just mails in the show and does it recorded, so no one can stop me. It wouldn't really be a 1930s kind of swing era show unless we played this one, and it's the one that probably a lot of you were hoping that we'd play. It wasn't the song that broke them, but it sure as hell became a big hit and stays a big hit from the late 1930s. I think it was recorded in 1937, but released in 1938. Here is Benny Goodman and Sing, Sing, Sing. Until next week, next Sunday night at 8, this is Jay saying take it easy. Don't forget to support your local jazz scene. Thanks so much for listening and have a great week.